You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
As we begin this morning, welcome to the Hope and Anchor and to our session co-hosted by the Methodist Church and CMS. It's really exciting, two organisations that care passionately about pioneering and getting into our communities and reflecting on what Christians are called to do in the midst of exciting creative places. My name's Matt Finch. I head up Beginning New Christian Communities in the Methodist Church. And I'm co-hosting today, but would love to talk to you afterwards if you wanted to talk about pioneering and all things like that. But I won't waffle on. I'm going to hand over to Natalie, who's going to talk about our session and introduce herself.
Good morning, everyone. So I work for the Church Mission Society, which you may have come across. Anybody heard of CMS? Woohoo. And is it because you're familiar with the overseas missionary work? Yes, which still happens. I work for a team that focuses on mission in the UK, in the British Isles. And what we do particularly is pioneer training. And we're interested in activating and resourcing and energising and supporting people who think outside the box and who are interested in connecting with the 85% of people who say they will never, ever, ever come to church, no matter how good the coffee and how whizzy the worship. So, and one of my colleagues has developed in that is something called the Pioneer Spectrum. So Tina Hodgett and Paul Bradbury developed this way of thinking about people who operate in this zone. And without any kind of judgment on it, it's not, one end's better than the other. At one end, there's kind of church planting and replicating, taking an idea of how to do church and putting it somewhere new and different. And that travels all the way through to something called social enterprise. Anybody here want to offer a definition of social enterprise? What is it? Anybody feeling brave? And because this venue is all about conversation. So anybody want to share what they think a social enterprise is?
Yeah. Is that a hand up or is that ordering a drink?
Ordering drink.
Business for good, rather than for profit.
Brilliant. Perfect. And what we're going to do today is the plan is that we're going to hear from a couple of people who are engaged in this, have some experience and wisdom to share, wouldn't claim to be experts, I'm sure, but have a story to share. And then we've got an incubator process as the kind of workshop aspect of this session. And the idea with that is that it's not about like generating a business plan. It's just about initiating some ideas that you might then take away and work up into something actually workable as a social enterprise. But what I wanted to find out first of all is how many of you are already engaged in a social enterprise? Quite a few. So, you know, if you might be here not wanting more ideas, you might want to have a conversation about what you're engaged in. So what do you want to do? Hands up for the workshop approach. Or hands up for just a conversation about social enterprise. I think that seems to win. If you're keen to generate ideas, come and chat to me afterwards and we'll talk about that. So it'd be great to hear, first of all, from Angie and Nell, just a bit of story sharing about your experiences. And then from there, perhaps we can just springboard into a conversation, hear from some other stories and just have some conversation. Is that okay for the next few minutes? Yeah. Brilliant.
Cool. Matt. Fantastic. Who wants to go first? Come on, Nell. Come on, Nell. So, yep. There's a round of applause for Nell. We can stand up, or do you want to do barstool, kind of stand-up comedian feel?
Oh, no, yeah, no, which no. Would you rather? I can stand up.
Okay, so I'm really pleased to welcome Nell to the Hope and Anchor to share a bit of her story. I'm one of Nell's biggest fans. She's one of those dreamers that gets on and does lots of amazing things. So, Nell, tell us a bit about yourself, who you are, where you come from.
Good morning. So I'm Nell. I'm from Sheffield. Obviously, support Sheffield Wednesday. Sorry if that is the wrong team.
Have they still got a football team?
They have a fantastic football team. So I'm married to my lovely husband. He's called Jim. He's an archaeologist. I'm not going to do stand-up.
Okay.
But my one favourite thing about being married to an archaeologist is that the older you get, the more interested in you he becomes.
She's here all weekend.
I thank you. We've got two fabulous boys and two amazing daughters-in-law and a daughter-in-love. And a crazy dog.
Fantastic.
But I work up in Airedale, which is in western North Yorkshire, as a Methodist presbyter.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what your social kind of enterprise pioneering is all about, a bit of the story.
I will do. The story is a good one because given the theme of this weekend here at Greenbelt, the story literally begins with a dream. I was asleep, which is my favourite hobby, fast asleep, and I had a dream that was very, very clear. In my dream, I saw myself walking out of a shop. It had two bay windows either side, and it was obviously a significant dream. And I phoned one of my colleagues and said, I've had this dream. I don't understand it. I don't recognise this place, but I just need to put a pin in this dream because it feels really important. And then about 5 or 6 months later, I was doing some walking chaplaincy in Keighley, which, if you know Bradford District and Keighley, it's not well loved. It doesn't attract a lot of people. We've had a vacancy as a schools worker for 4 years, repeatedly advertised. People don't want to come, just appointed, thankfully. So I was doing my walking chaplaincy around the town centre and went into this little tucked away place, and there was the shop. There was exactly the shop that had been in my dream. And what a moment.
Yeah.
What a moment. Went to our staff team, and I know if you're familiar with Methodism, we are great things he has taught us, and we are the tortoise in that particular theology.
You are a stand-up comedian.
We move very, very slowly. This was the Monday morning, and by the Monday evening, we'd had an emergency, extraordinary leadership team, and we'd signed the lease. It was done in less than 24 hours.
Wow. Okay. So what has the tortoise achieved? Where's the story now?
So the tortoise has achieved. In my dream, there was no business. There was no social enterprise. I didn't know what we were going to be doing. We knew we wanted to love Keighley. That was all we knew. We needed to love this place that was profoundly unloved. So we had an empty shop space. I'd previously, in a previous circuit, run a baby clothes library. We have to be careful with the advertising, because if you just put that it's a place for like a baby library, that's not good with safeguarding.
Yeah.
So baby clothes library. And I had all this stock left over. So we simply filled the shop with these bags and bags of leftover stock and discovered. It's very, very sad, because you may remember this was around the time that baby Star had been killed. I don't know whether you remember that awful, tragic story. And that was within the town centre, and it had really shocked the whole community. And by the grace of God and holy serendipity, we were there, a place for families with babies and young children who had no money. I will say the majority of whom were working, and they were the vast number of people who needed to come to us. They were working, and they were working hard, and they were caring for their children exceptionally well. They were not eating themselves, and they were turning the heating off when the children went to bed. And they were the people that came to us.
Yeah. Thank you. So what are the things that you'd want to share in terms of top tips on social enterprise in your story? Perhaps things you've learned that you wouldn't do again, or what is it you'd share? Kind of 3 points, maybe.
Don't go to sleep.
Yeah, okay. Or you might
dream. You might have a dream. I think the thing that we have learned, we were always, as you said, for good and not for profit. Fantastic definition. We were always for good and not for profit, but we still have to pay the bills. We still have to pay our rent. And we've now bought a much, much bigger premises in order to extend the work significantly. The thing I would say is, don't worry about the money. And that sounds really daft and really simple. But it works more like a barter system, and you can't put that on a spreadsheet. I remember years and years and years ago reading a book by a Christian woman whose husband had died, and her bank balance didn't work anymore. She added it up, and there was this massive deficit, and she felt God say to her, but you've not added me into any column. And we have found that that's what's happened. We have some funding, and the Methodist Church funds us now through MPMP, New Places for New People. We didn't have that originally. But people will come with little bits of fish and a small loaf and say, our trade union has a little charity pot. We can give you £150 and there's another fish. Somebody will say, our women's fellowship has got £250. We've decided to give it to you. And that's a little bit of a loaf. And so I would say trust all the things that you wouldn't put on the spreadsheet. All the ladies who knit the most beautiful baby clothes that we cannot sell because they don't have any labels. You cannot sell them. We have to give them away. And they just knit loads. Trust all the people who will do all your laundry for you because everything in the store is washed and smells wonderful. That's hilarious when there's somebody who's gloriously single in the early 50s and their neighbours see washing lines of baby clothes and you can see them going over the back garden and going, do you need to tell us anything? Trust all those things that you would never have been able to factor in. When you are doing gatherings and somebody will just kindly come in and say, I can't give you much, but here's two pencil sharpeners. That was genuinely something that happened.
Yeah.
Here's two pencil sharpeners. That was what they could give. Fantastic. So that's the biggest thing I've learned is don't fret about that spreadsheet because God's barter system will work.
Nell, thank you so much. A round of applause for Nell, I think. Some great stuff. There will be time to ask questions in a little while. So you will be back up here to field questions because people will be interested in you and Angie, not me and Natalie. So, yeah, great. Shall we hand over to Angie? Is that good?
Definitely. I am so excited to sit and listen to this fantastic lady.
Thanks for being here, Angie. Tell us about who you are and where you're. What's your context?
Okay, so my name's Angie, and I'm from Birmingham, as you can tell by my accent. And I've been in Winston Green, which is inner city Birmingham, for about 10 years. And before that, I was living in Thailand, in a big slum in Bangkok for 12 years. So my background originally is I was a social worker in Australia, and then my husband and I were both Church of Christ ministers, and we felt the call to become downwardly mobile and to intentionally move into a poor community and do life with our neighbours. And actually, in our early days, we formed a Protestant order and we took vows of poverty. All you have to do is join the church for that, don't you? But anyway, the chastity didn't go so well, no. And so, and part of the reason we did that is we wanted to, so many of our friends got involved in this kind of cutting edge, working with the poorest of the poor and those who are outcast, and kind of lost their faith in anger at the church. And we thought, how do we make sure that what we have to offer stays centred on Christ? And we looked at like the Catholic orders of Franciscans and the Jesuits and thought, that's cool, let's make an order. And we all got matching tattoos, so that's our little cult that we joined. But really those formative years were about how do we genuinely do life with our neighbours, those who are forgotten and let down by society. And then we decided to move to a slum in Bangkok and work with the poorest of the poor there. And we saw the similar kind of issues of poverty. Poverty is everywhere, isn't it? And then my husband decided he wanted to move to the UK, and I came kicking and screaming and throwing my toys out of the pram, thinking how, you know, first world problems, what will I do with my energy? I'm quite hyperactive and I need lots to do. And in Thailand, I had 16 social enterprises and we ran medical programs. We had an AIDS hospice. And then I find myself in Birmingham as a school chaplain for Oasis. And within 6 weeks of being in this country, I was shocked by the poverty. Everything that we saw in 12 years in a slum in Asia, we have seen over and over again, and actually much worse in the UK. And it's getting worse, isn't it? So then how do you not become overwhelmed? So we decided to do what we know best, and that is to do life with our neighbours and to just open up our doors. We took over an old vicarage and in a housing crisis where one person was living in a six-bedroom house, and we inhabited it with our neighbours and friends, and that was the start of Newbegin Community Trust, which is a charity that until Wednesday I will lead. And then alongside that, a church. And Yeah, so I guess that's the...
And where does social enterprise feature in Winston Green and what you're doing with your current community?
Well, I guess the thing was, how do we become known in the neighbourhood? We're hyper-local, so our commitment is to our direct neighbourhood. And so initially we bought a couple of alpacas and a trailer, and then we just started walking the alpacas to and from the school. And mainly we had alpacas, not because I knew anything about them and not that I even really like animals, but because there were no rules about having urban alpacas. So we thought, I wanted to have sheep, but apparently there were rules of that. So I just Googled, are there any rules about having... And that's where the enterprise bit comes in. I think when we think about enterprise, so many people think about business and money. Actually, to me, enterprise is about thinking differently and going, okay, if this is what we have for church and it's in decline, what do we need to change? How can we do things differently? How do we engage the community? And sometimes that is enterprise that brings in income and self-sustains. So often, though, I think it's about including the people who have been othered and bringing them to the centre. And we work on an asset-based model, asset-based community development, and we talk often about the assets of brokenness. Our neighbourhood in Winston Green, we have a huge prison in the middle, and it was on that show Benefit Street, and it's got all that, you know, you could say, oh, it's this and that. But actually, our neighbourhood is not a problem to be fixed. It's an asset to be loved. The people in the neighbourhood are assets, and the assets of brokenness that we hold in our hands. So if you've been homeless, you make a great housing worker because you know what it's like. If you struggle with addiction, you're my best addictions worker. And that's what we try to do, is say, what is it that you have in your hand? No one's coming to help us. There isn't funding. But what is it that we have in our hand to do together as neighbours? And that's pretty much what we've done. And that's led us to having, we've turned our church into a roller skating rink. We have a blacksmithing forge. We have a bike project. All of those things are just the methods. The mission is to see our community transformed and to see people live the life God intended for them. And the projects, they'll come and go and they'll change, but they're not the mission. They're just the method of the time. And as people join us who have different passions, then we have different methods. And so at the moment I do... If anyone been on the Birmingham canals, you've got to dodge the shopping trolleys. But I run we call it the Winston Green Nautical Society. And we have kayaks and bell boats. And I'm a cafe girl, but I seem to have all these outdoorsy jobs because somebody wanted to do it. So we thought, let's give it a crack. And that's how the church has grown. Yeah.
And just following on from what Nell shared, what would be your top tip for someone who is feeling energized and drawn towards this notion of social enterprise as a missional activity? What would be the one thing that you would say you must or think about?
Yeah, I think so often when we come from church structures, it's all about control and organization and the paperwork. And actually, for true enterprise to happen, it's got to start from the bottom up. So don't think about funding and people. Start with the asset in your neighborhood and then see what God does with that. And then when we do something, for every five things that I've been involved in starting in 30 years, three fail. Mm. But that doesn't matter because we haven't got funding, we haven't got the structures, we give it a crack. Nobody's, we have, everyone has knit and natter. Mm. So somebody wanted to do these knit and natter, ours became stitch and bitch. They definitely stitch and bitch. So I'm so glad they're not, we can stop them whenever we need to, which is often. So that's like the other way around. So if even for our church, the service on a Sunday was the very last thing we did. We waited 2 years before we did that because there's many, many churches of the form and the culture that middle-class people can join in our neighbourhood that people don't go to. And if I start a church, it will just be like what I need. And there's already what I need elsewhere. So if it's started by the neighbours, it has to be the thing that they start, and you've got to gather the crowd first of the people who are not in the church and then let them lead and start it. So my thing is start stuff first, worry about the structure later, have a few people doing. I do what's called a dynamic risk assessment and sometimes a retrospective risk assessment. Yeah. But, if you're working with your neighbours, your neighbour's doing things. You're allowed to do a lot more than if you're an organisation. So when my neighbour's struggling with their teenage kids, we can take them in. We can take mum and the kids in. If you set yourself up too officially, you can't do that. Mm. So the church has lost its ability to become, to love their neighbour, because we've tied ourselves up in red tape. So we have both streams. We have the charity that we can do things under. We have the church we can do things under. When things are high risk, we put them under the charity, and then we have all that liability insurance. When things are a bit more neighbourly and need a bit of a softer edge, we can do that as church together. And so having a few of those options. Mm. But then when things look like they're working, that's when we then go for it. Let's make this a program. Mm. Yeah, let's get some funding. Let's see how we can sustain it. So yeah. We do enterprise the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much, Angie. Quick round of applause for Angie for being here and sharing. I think probably it would be good to just open up to the floor, as the intention is for this to be conversational, and ask questions or share stories. Or is that okay, Matt?
It's fine by me. Yeah. It'd be good to get the microphone out if it can stretch to people, but if not, maybe
hop
to the
along.
Mic. Yeah, or so, we can repeat it.
Yeah, feel free to dive in with questions, comments, other stories to share, other wisdom in the room.
So I'm the director of a social enterprise called Sacred Bean Coffee, which has been going for about 4 years. I don't know if any customers here. We do. Oh, yay, okay. Oh, brilliant.
Big up Sacred Bean, woohoo.
So that has been quite a long haul, because we're set up as a CIC. So the structure thing is quite important.
Could you just explain CIC?
Yeah, so that's
CIC.
I can't remember what it is now. It's a charitable incorporated company. Community interest company. Well done. And so we registered with Company House. We have to have an accountant. We have to file our accounts. We've just got our roasteries, just got 5-star food hygiene, because they originally said roasteries don't need to have food hygiene things, it's a low risk, but anyway, now they do. So there's a lot of kind of bureaucracy, which I think one of the other speakers said. So I think the challenge for me is, you've got to if you're trying to run a social enterprise, you have got to get all those things right, risk assessments and all of that lot. And you're trying to run a business, you've got to be able to trade, you've got to be able to buy stuff, you've got to be able to process it, you've got to be able to sell it, you've got to be able to look after your customers, which hopefully we are. And that, which is all those things a normal business has to do. Mm. But on top of that, you have your social purpose of what you're also trying to do about the people you're trying to help. So for us, we're trying to help people with barriers to work to learn how to roast coffee and to pack coffee and to sell coffee. So it really is a lot of to be able to do it and to be able to run in a financial model that keeps going. Because also you are also looking for grants, you're looking for opportunities and so on. So it's a lot is what I'm saying. So yes. I would really encourage people to try and not do it on their own, but get people who've got those skills, maybe who are already in business or who are already running charities or whatever, so that you're not trying to do it all on your own. Because there's one thing, which is the idea and like the thing, like coffee. Wow, coffee's amazing, and we can get directly traded coffee, and we can do this and that. We have to buy all the equipment, so on. But there's a whole other thing around governance and a whole other thing about marketing. Mm. And then you think, oh, we need to really be on social media. So before you know it, it's a lot.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that's my thing I'd say to people, but it's really amazing doing it.
And can I ask
you? Thank you so much.
A bit more about barriers to work, employing people.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, so the thing about barriers to work is, so this is the like thing. It sounds so obvious, but if you set out to employ people who've got barriers to work, then sooner or later you'll realise the reason why they've got barriers to work, which sounds really obvious, but it took us a while to really learn that, I guess. And I think the thing, so you might find somebody who's had a background in addiction, or a background that where they've been to prison, or we had somebody, a volunteer, who'd come over in a little boat across the channel and was unable to work, but was somebody who'd worked full time all their life, and suddenly they were in home office accommodation, they couldn't work, and so we said, oh, well, come on, you know, you can come and work for us as a volunteer. And they were really good. But I think it's all the issues that people have that aren't to do with that background, particularly necessarily because they're people that are keen to come alongside us, but have other issues like ongoing family problems or ongoing health problems, or obviously having to go to loads of home office meetings, or so they just can't commit in the way that you need to be able to rely on people, if you like, 100%. And so it's how do you then have backup people who can come in and do things, because we have got customers, we need to get the coffee roasted, we need to get it done. So you have to have like another team of people that can, even like, you know, my mum, you know, people like, oh no, we're in trouble, someone's not turned up, we need to get this out the door, we need to be able to trade. So there's having that kind of that kind of backup, which maybe other people also do. So I think the problem that you have when you're small is that you're multitasking so many different things, and particularly if you're a volunteer yourself, you may be doing many other things, working yourself, also at church, doing other stuff as well. It's how to move from being at a really small thing that is trading, it is working, it is financially viable, but it's not helping as many people as you feel it needs to. So it's how to move to that next level. And we've talked to lots of other enterprises who are at that next level to try and understand the journey to scale up. And that's been a real problem for us because we aren't as big as we want to be. And it's our own, we know it's our own limitations. It's our own time that's holding us that back, but none of us have any more time. So other, when you get to the next level, you can employ somebody that's looking after people. Because there's a brilliant social enterprise in Derby called Upbeat Communities that employs lots of people that have come through the refugee thing. And they've got like a full-time people support worker. Also Jericho, in a shout out to Jericho in Birmingham, who've been amazing. They've got full-time support workers or multiple support workers. And, you know, it, the whole thing just works. So you can either work it at a tiny level or a big level, but how do you get to that from that small to big is the challenge that we are grappling with and have been for over a year. So if there's anybody got any advice on that, that's great, because we don't really want to get loads of grants because we want to be a business. So, and also we haven't got time to apply for loads of grants. So it's how to make that jump.
Fantastic. There's always so much wisdom in the room. If you've got any wisdom that you'd like to share, is that directly related to that? Yeah, because we've got one. Yeah, you sure? You come forward and share. That's great. Sorry. What was your name, please? What was your name?
Chandra.
Thank you. Chandra, yeah. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm the director of The Engine Room. We are a church and community centre in North London. We'd love to talk to you about coffee because we do loads of coffee in our place. We're the first new Church of England church in the Diocese of London for 40 or 5 years. Woohoo! But the challenge that I have is that I'm a retired chief executive of large charities, brought in social enterprise and operate a room hire business that now turns over about £250,000 a year as a social enterprise for the church. And we've been hugely successful. Everything works. We've got fair trade coffee. We've got families in 7 days a week. We've got businesses using the premises. We have a nursery, a cafe. I won't go back to my... I'm a Methodist, whoever the Methodist was that spoke. I'm going to say something. And moved into the Church of England and found this great desire to do something different. We're on a housing estate in Tottenham in North London. Went back to my home church in Fleet in Hampshire, Methodist church, grown up. Minister, leadership team are asking my elderly parents for more and more money. I go, you've got a modern church. You've got an empty building sitting here for 6 days a week. Okay, there's a nursery that's using a hall in the morning, but the rest of the time it's basically empty, apart from Sunday mornings. Turn around to the minister. The minister says, no way can we have a social enterprise or a room hire business here because we need to keep the space available for God's mission.
Fantastic. So it looks like there's a conversation about coffee at least. Thanks very much for that. Okay, do you want to come and share? Had you sat down to share? Yeah, come on. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you'd come forwards. I've just put you on the spot.
I'm Maria. I've got a stand over there. And we do sewing as our means of mission. I set up a project where we work with asylum seekers in a local hotel, doing alterations and dressmaking on donated clothes from the local churches. And when we get back from Greenbelt, we will be going mobile. So we'll actually be going into different towns with the sewing machines, and we won't just be serving asylum seekers. We'll be taking them into the community and enabling people on low income and that can afford to actually pay for a session to donate towards the time we spend sharing our skills. So.
How can we talk to you?
There you go. This is great. Fantastic.
Are there any other just general questions or stories to share? Oh, there's one coming here. Brilliant. Thank you.
There we go.
It's not a story, but that gentleman over there, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's the desire to do something different and how we can then encourage people to capture the vision and to be a part of that. But thank you. That phrase is coming back with me. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, I think that's a really key question, isn't it? How do you travel with people from we can't have a social enterprise here because we need the space. So any top tips? There's one just here. Oh, there's one coming. Yeah. There's one just here.
Okay, yeah.
This is not a top tip. This is a question. Have any of the big churches, C of E or Methodist or anything, got a kind of structure that enables people to feed into and do this? Because it feels like they should have.
Okay. Angie? Yeah.
Just on structure, I think pioneering is what we've talked about, is that the pioneering networks across Methodist, URC and CMS, Church of England, are the place where a lot of entrepreneurs find their home. Mm. And it's a different way of seeing ministry and business together and doing things different. On the hiring local people, I have 29 staff hired, and they're all people that have never had a job before. And exactly, we had the ideal. Wouldn't it be great to hire all local people with lived experience? Then you have the ordeal. There's a reason why they haven't. But whenever we have the ordeal, we realise that's why they work for us. You've got to trust God that that's the people he's given you. And then you can come out with the new deal, and then you have another ideal and ordeal, and it keeps going. But I think that's exactly the right space, is you have to have other people. The role of volunteers is to help people succeed. It's to help other people succeed. So people who step in when our staff don't turn up for the cafe because they're having a family crisis or they've gone back on a bender, their ministry is to help other people succeed. That's how we see it, and that's how the whole thing ticks over.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Fantastic. There was an answer to that, and then you, yeah.
Someone mentioned about the building being a mission, how to make your social enterprise actually be mission. And what we're doing with our sewing sessions is having a special volunteer session before we start the sewing sessions, to make sure that every volunteer knows how to have a conversation, how to listen, how to remember what they've been told by the people that they talk to, and how to prayerfully pray for them in at different levels of discreetness and boldness. In Jesus' name.
Fantastic. And I would say, as someone who works for the Methodist Church, my role is to enable people to be connected to the social enterprise, to be doing the new thing. And I would love a conversation with you if sparks an idea.
And it seems like a plug moment as well, CMS run training programs. And one of the courses that we do is something called Make Good, which is all about, it's a week-long residential program, and you come along and it's an incubator process, basically. You take your idea and work it up into something that you can actually go and do. I think the other thing to say about where does this fit into church structures, I'm sure most of you who are present in this room will know that you just go and do it. You go round, not through. And, it's the whole kind of ask for forgiveness rather than permission principle. And in the diocese where I live and work in Gloucester, there's a great social enterprise. It's a group of social enterprises called the Grace Network. The Long Table is a feature of that. It's been in the press quite a bit. And they just did it. And now the diocese is really keen on them. And, I think Bishop Rachel's been here, actually, so I better be quiet. But but that's the way this happens mostly, isn't it, right? That you just get on and do it. And, yes, there are opportunities going begging churches that could be used. But if if people aren't up for it, I don't know about, I personally, I don't have the skills of persuasion to, you just go and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And not wanting to turn it into a spit fight about kind of who's doing what, but if you want to know about the exciting thing the Methodists are doing, just click on some of the information that's on the tables. And we've shaken out our sofas upside down, found as much money as we can, a few million pounds going into pioneering and social enterprise over the next few years. But we realise it will only work with people who have a vision. And that's why we're here. So yeah, do get in touch if you think we can support you in something amazing. Right, over to you.
I'm sorry, I was outside, so I can't see who, but the group that was talking about getting from small size to bigger size, I'm not sure who that was.
Coffee.
The coffee group. I work for quite a large grant maker, and I do understand the reluctance to go down the trust and grants routes, because there's a lot of monitoring and there's an issue of sustainability and financial sort of reliance and that sort of thing. But we do make a number of grants to a number of organisations that are, they're not called development grants, but that is effectively what they are. And there is a place for that. I was just like an encouragement to not be completely terrified of going down the grant route. If you're looking for, you know, fund the support worker so that whoever is the vision and the networky person can go and find the other ways of fundraising, or fund the sustainable finance person, and, or fund a consultant that will come in, and that, just don't be too terrified of that. I agree, long-term reliance isn't necessarily great, but there is a place for good grant making with some funders.
Thank you. That's really important to hear. And we've got a funder saying, don't be afraid. There's money there for you. This is a great session, isn't it? No, well, there might be. Don't be afraid. Sorry, you can tell I'm a pioneer. I've inflated that into it's all possible. Right. You come forward. It's great.
Hi, I'm Peter. We're from Sheffield. We started. Talk to you later. We started a social enterprise in April last year, and we run it as a limited company. And we decided to do that because we didn't want to go down the grant funding route, for all of the reasons. My question, though, we failed to reverse ourselves into our church. They weren't interested. But the question that I've got for everybody really is there such a thing as a Christian organization, or are there just organizations that have Christians in them? And and this is a question about how we describe ourselves, about our identity, about how we write down our values. So I'm interested in what other people think about that.
Should we hand it over to our experts, or Natalie, you look like you might have an answer?
No, I was just going to say, great question. And yeah, Nell, do you want to respond on that?
Yes. I think that is such a key question, because, and we're a Methodist church as an enterprise. We're a Methodist way of life community, which gives us that monastic prayerful structure. But everything we do is interfaith. Everything we do, and we've had to really consider our policies about, because we're gathering people from so many different faiths, finding a policy that is comfortable when it's time for other faiths to pray, and creating a space for them to have that prayerful space. So I lean away. I'm a Christian, but our organisation and what we're doing, whilst it's very significantly under the umbrella of the Methodist Church, it's a spiritual gathering space. And all faiths and none are welcome, because we don't even use the word church. We're called the new place, which is really imaginative because it's a new place. And we use the term pre-loved as well. So I think that's really important. And we lean away from not declaring that, and not naming ourselves as that. And what I then find interesting is we get more questions about what we believe. We get more opportunities to witness than if we stated it, because then everyone assumes they know what we are and they know what we do. So I think it's a really important thing when we're thinking about pioneering, is that use of language and that use of definitions, because that's part of the sea change for me. And I'm really sorry about your church in Sheffield.
Yeah, it's not recorded. No, it's not. That bit was, but yeah. I think it's a fascinating one. As someone who works with loads of pioneers throughout the UK, there's no one answer. And I think everything about pioneering is trusting your guts. What's right in that moment? Is it to say, yes, we are, or is it not? And a fascinating new place for new people network that's coming up in Liverpool at the minute, the Neighbourhood Project. They were really not wanting to use the word church. And then they got really annoyed about the new people finding faith going, do you know what? This is our church. So it wasn't the pioneers who named it. It was the people that go, do you know, there's a really amazing experience of God in this place. And I didn't think I would find that, but this is church. But actually, it's not right for people in another new community that's forming. It's about trust your guts. God's given you who you are to think that through as someone who's beginning something new.
Are there any other comments or questions on that whole question around a missiology of proclamation and how you understand that?
Our contributors back. You didn't realise you were coming to this to become the session leaders. Do you want to come forward as well from the back? This is great.
So I would like to put a different point of view to what's been said. So I'm also part of a church that has multiple social enterprises, as well as doing this coffee thing. So we've got a car valeting, like evangelical car valeting business going.
And what is one of those?
Well, what is one of those is, so this is so somebody, had a vision, I guess, about car valeting. So it was a guy in my church. He's an electrician. In COVID, he couldn't work because he had to obviously go into people's houses. And he ended up in hospital actually. And then it came to him while he was praying that, about car valeting. So he learned how to do car valeting. He's a very practical guy. And then he decided, because he'd previously worked on night shelter in church, wouldn't it be great if some guys who had been previously in night shelter would be able to learn about car valeting, because he absolutely loved it. And so he came to our church, which is a bit unusual. And so because we always say yes to everything. And so we said, yeah, absolutely. We're all on board with car valeting as part of church. And we're just about to start our, I think, fifth car valeting academy in partnership with a homeless hostel. So the reason it's car valeting academy is because they valet people's cars, and the people come and they go, oh, yes, we'd like you to valet our cars. And they pay a lot of money. And then they go, now we want to tell you about Jesus. So this isn't the people running it. This is the valeters are saying, they'll say, oh, how did you get into this? And they go, well, I came to faith and God's called me and I'm here doing your car and I need to tell you about Jesus. So that's how it works. And in fact, I think more people have got baptized as from car valeting than from Alpha in our church now. So, but what I was going to say was that, so for our coffee company, it's not part of church. We don't set it out to be, it's all the people involved with it are Christians. Many of the people who are helping or working for us are Christians or on a faith journey. And we do set it out to be a coffee community, and we are into church, but we don't call it church. And one of the reasons we think we've been struggling a bit is because we're not linked to a church. We're an independent thing. And so recently we've approached a local church, which is the church I go to, and we're now trying to form a link with the church. And it's partly because we do sell a lot of coffee to churches. But also we just felt as a group of directors that something was missing, because although we always prayed and we asked our friends to be praying, especially when we're struggling, we felt that there was something missing when we weren't under some sort of link with a church. And so we've actively tried this year to get closer to a church. And we're going to see how that works.
Thank you. That's great.
Did you want to come?
I'll be quick. Just a point on the interfaith stuff. So we had an interesting experience in that the engine room was obviously a project set up by the Church of England, by the Diocese of London. They invested a lot of money. And then our local Muslim community came to us and said, we actually need a home. And so that caused all kinds of issues in my head, because I used to be the advocacy director for CSW, Christian Solidarity Worldwide. And so Yeah, I have to say I had to sort of confront my own scepticism about using our centre as a interfaith home. But we now have regular Friday prayers, not in the worship space, but in other rooms. And we have great use of the facility by Muslim women, especially. In fact, last Friday night, there were two groups in two different spaces. And we felt, especially during the recent troubles and what's been going on in the UK, that we've been making a really important contribution. And we know because we get incredibly positive feedback from that community. We often have issues when they put on Google Maps that the Tottenham Hale Mosque is located right on top of where our location, our pin is, so to speak, on Google. So we have to have quiet conversations with them. But again, I don't see many churches opening up their doors to groups of other faith. I did fund, in another role, St. Philip's in Leicester, which is an interfaith project, works fabulously across the different faith communities in Leicester. But again, very few churches seem to be prepared to open their doors to groups of other faith.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, particularly perhaps to our contributors? Yes, over here. So the question was, why can't the church be used for Muslim prayer?
So sorry, you've just walked all the way back. You've got to come back again. Thank you. We don't want to answer for you.
It's a legal requirement that the Church of England has a designation of its specific worship spaces. So the irony is that the multi-purpose space, which is also used as the church on a Sunday, can have a big old party going on a Saturday night, and lots of music and loud noise. But we can't, and I'm told, but I just follow instructions, I'm told that because it is a recognised place of Anglican worship under an Act of Parliament, that we can't have other faith worship in that space.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Just to respond to that, if you're in the URC church, you can even have roller skating in your chapel. But I think it's every building comes with its own rules and laws, and so often that's a barrier to social enterprise and for entrepreneurial people, but there's always a way around it. And that's the thing I would encourage you to, is not when there's a no, why is there a no? And then look at what can we do together to get around. So for me, there's lots of no's all the time, and then we work out how to still do it anyway, but taking other people on that journey. So we had an issue where we needed to rip up the stage that someone built there for eight people to have church, but it was getting in the way of the skateboard ramp for the teenagers. And so as long as we made it look nice, that they could still do the service they wanted to do on Sunday. We just had to compromise a little bit. But we also would say the way that we work, and everyone's theology is different, I would say that the cost of my friendship is not people's souls. So we will work cross-faith, and we want to start with what we have in common with people. And so often as evangelical Christians, that's my background, we start with what we think people are missing and what's wrong with, you know, like, we see people as outside rather than inside. And so what we do is, as humans together, this is what we have in common. And then as we love and include people and allow them to have purpose and serve, we did the same. We didn't call our church church, but all of the people that come tell everyone, and we've got people here who are Muslim and Sikh who've been telling everyone about the Lodge Road Church. We call it the Lodge Road Community Centre. But they see it as their church, and isn't that great? But we didn't impose that on them. So it's all about everyone's got different approach, and I think we need all the approaches. I don't think one approach is right or wrong. I think the church is so monocultural and people are so diverse and different, even in this room. Why does every church, regardless of what denomination, seem to have the hymn sandwich and the it can be more penty or more contemplative, but we still have this one form that we call church, and we're missing 80% of God's creation who want to celebrate and engage differently. And so that's the entrepreneurial journey I'd encourage us to be on. And if you're not someone who thinks differently, hang around with people who do, and that's been a blessing for me, and that opens up other possibilities.
Thank you, that's great. That's a question.
Just really picking up on, do you call yourself Christian? Do you not? I'm the director of a charity that has a Christian bookshop in hospital in Gloucester and in Cardiff. We are overtly Christian in that about two-thirds of our stock is Christian literature, but we also have stock to encourage users of the hospital and hospital staff to come into the shop, to use it, to be exposed to Christian material as part of their journey through the shop. And if they wish to have a conversation, as you all know, hospitals can be stressful, difficult places. And so we're trying to create that space. And some of the feedback that we've had is that it is a different atmosphere. People come and use the space. We would aim to create a spirit-filled atmosphere, but we're trying to create a space that all sorts of people will use to let God work.
Fab, thank you. Any other questions, comments, stories? Meditative silence for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I think we've covered kind of the two big questions seems to be around that whole, where are the edges around faith and spirituality, and how do you make this work as a business when you're trying to do something radically different? Those are the big things to engage with, aren't there? Is there any other wisdom in the room that people want to share around that stuff? Yes, do come forward.
Hello, my name's Alan, and I'm also from Sheffield. Now I don't know, I don't remember much of the details about this, but I remember a while back on Songs of Praise, there was this there was some sort of social enterprise that was mentioned in York that employed ex-offenders. I mean, I don't know much about the details about it, but if there's anyone, maybe there's someone here who might know more about it. And of course, I believe that Robert Timpson did the same, and of course, he's now prisons minister.
Thank you very much. Okay, yep.
I will tell this story very badly because my memory for things is rubbish. But have you heard for Homes for Habitat? Habitat for Humanity? Yes. When they started out, it was with the view that they were connecting with the local community that was predominantly white middle class, and then the Native Americans living on the reservation, very close, divided by either a river or a road. I know they're two different things, but yeah, something that looks like this. And so they together built a house because the poverty there was so poor that people were living in houses that were substandard. And they thought this has gone really well. The connection between the middle class community and the Indigenous Americans has really built. We're going to repeat it. So they got some more money and they repeated it. And they were like, this is absolutely brilliant. Look at these people now in lovely homes. And because as they got bigger and bigger, they got in some more contractors, and then some more policies came into place, and then some more professionals. And the bigger and bigger they got, they still had the volunteers coming in, but it became such a strong, rigid structure of now what success looks like is some really lovely, well-made homes. And the intention of connecting community and community was lost. So they stopped. And they said, this isn't the values that are driving us. Let's go back to the drawing board. And I think that is always the challenge to anyone wanting to engage. If you're successful, it's absolutely brilliant. But if it's not aligning with your values, then go back to the drawing board and be brave enough to stop. I work for Methodist Relief and Development, or we can. And one of the things we do is we don't take money that restricts how our communities spend it. So we're taking a massive hit because there is lots of funding for girls' education, for water, for clean water, for gender equality. All of those are absolutely brilliant, but that is not the priorities of the local community. So it's the establishing, what do your values look like in practice, so that as you are working, as you are going in new directions and hopefully being incredibly successful, it doesn't end up being actually this success looks like efficiency and a really nicely built building.
Thank you. Yeah, Angie.
Just on that, that's a really brilliant point. There's two types of funding. There's prescriptive funding and there's reactive responsive funding. And that's exactly the thing you can get involved in getting mixed up with. So Child in Need is very famous for giving lots of prescriptive funding. We got a grant to do science projects with kids from black and ethnic minority groups. Or you can get, the council wanted to give us £30,000 to support Syrian refugees, but I couldn't open the door and say, sorry, you're not from Syria, I can't help you. So money has spiritual power, and if we take money that dictates what we're going to do, even if it's what we want to do now, but in 2 years' time the community says, we don't want to run stay and play groups anymore, we want to do this, but we're tied into a five-year contract, you limit what you're free to do and what God can direct you to do. So I would always say, look at responsive money and don't let the money control what you do. And so many groups end up losing their way and losing their values. And we've shut things down. We've given, don't be afraid to give money back to donors. I've given money back, given $80,000 back when I was doing this in Thailand, because the donor changed what they wanted us to do with it. We said, it's not what the neighbourhood wants, so here's your money back. They just don't know what to do with you. We've offered it back in the UK 3 times and they've gone, oh, no, keep it, use it for something else. So, yeah, just be really honest about how money shouldn't. But the temptation is when you're desperate, oh, here's a grant, let's do this grant. And then you find yourself here and what God had called you to do was here. So that'd be mine.
Thank you. Yeah.
Just really quickly follow that up, because everyone here looks as if they're really, really rich. So if you're ever going to be leaving a legacy, just picking up on the alliteration, please, please don't ever give money that is in any way restrictive. So if you see something that's happening in your local church, so for instance, if you saw something that was happening in Keithley and you wanted to leave a legacy or you wanted to donate, please don't make it restrictive. Don't say, this is for the work of Pre-Loved, because in 6 months' time or a year's time, Pre-Loved may have evolved and changed. And there are literally gazillions of pounds in restrictive funds that it is so hard to release. So give it for the work of God, you know, and make it as liberating as you possibly can, because that's part of our legacy. That's part of passing on the mantle that we're able to do.
Great point, Nell. Thank you. How are we doing on time, Matt?
We've got 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Yes. Come.
So the social enterprise that we started in Sheffield that I mentioned earlier is for adults with learning difficulties. And our own son has learning difficulties, and we want that organisation to exist when we're long dead and gone. Mm-hmm. So from the funding point of view, we wanted to build something that could be there forever. And our issue with grant funding is that it might go away. So we wanted to start from the point of view that we need to make this work as a business, because we thought that was likely to be the thing that would last longest. And we felt that if we took grant money, then we would never really... Now, if you took grant money as pump priming money to get your business going, we might never get it going as a business. So to force ourselves to make it run as a business, we decided to be as a limited company and not take any grant money at all.
Thank you.
I hope you feel energized and inspired. If there's a germ of an idea working its way in you, or you've had a dream, a literal dream of something... I guess the final question I'd like to put out to the wisdom in the room is, as we've heard from the coffee bean company, it's a lot undertaking anything in this zone, whether it's just being entrepreneurial in your thinking and doing or an actual trading business, it's a lot. Where do you go for support? Where do you go for advice? What are your top tips on that? Anybody got things to offer? Is there a network of...
It depends very much on your local area, I would say, as to how good the organisations are. You should
So the CBS and the community. Okay. Okay.
SCBO.
SCBO.
And. Okay. Thank you.
Social Enterprise UK, and they have some regional versions of that as well. So okay. Specific social enterprise support, which I get first, and then I'll take.
Okay. Social Enterprise UK, thank you.
And right at the back, just shout.
Salt Network, and did she say CMS? CMS, something like that.
Yeah.
I've heard of them. Yeah, I think I've heard of them. Yeah. Cinnamon Incubator Program.
Brilliant. So a lot to try. Yes. Good.
There's Cooperative UK and there's Cooperative Finance.
Say the first one again. Sorry. Cooperatives UK.
Cooperatives UK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They give advice and support. Brilliant. Yeah. Thank you.
Fantastic.
And Angie, do you want to give a plug on your book?
Only just to lighten the mood and distract, but I did write a book, cover inspired by Joe Lysette, called Missionary, Not Just a Position. And it's a bit of a story of some of our social... We tried to be as honest as we could, because a lot of books people write, it's all... I sometimes can be read as Christian urban myth. It all sounds wonderful. So I tried to be really honest about all the things that went wrong and make it a little bit lighthearted as well. But if anyone wants one, I've got a few copies you can just have... or you can get it on Amazon, I think. But the other network is Locality Network, run across England nationally. They do funding and they link all the social enterprise groups together. They have a conference every year. So Locality, just look them up online as well.
Fantastic. Well, I think our time is done. It goes without saying, Natalie and myself are here for a conversation afterwards. As a Methodist, come and have a chat with me. If you want to make pioneering, if you want to get into pioneering and Methodism could be your home, I'd love to have a conversation with you. Please talk to me afterwards or check out stuff that's on the tables. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge thanks to Nell and to Angie for your amazing contributions and to all of you for sharing your wisdom. Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Well.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.